Greetings. This is James Stounce, the host of the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. And today I had the pleasure of interviewing Paul Youngquist. He's an English professor at the University of Colorado at Boulder. And his book is A Pure Solar World, Sun Ra and the Birth of Afrofuturism, published by the University of Texas Press. We had a great wide-ranging discussion about Sun Ra and how he fits into popular culture and how, from Paul's perspective, he is responsible for the birth of the Afrofuturism movement that people have become so familiar with today. So this is a great interview. Paul's a great guy, and he's really enthusiastic and interested in the work of Sun Ra. He also does a great job in explaining how you do archival research and how you can become a scholar. So young people, if you're interested in becoming an academic researcher like Paul, or you have a passion project like this, definitely you want to listen to this interview as well. So the book is A Pure Solar World, Sun Ra and the Birth of Afrofuturism. And the author is Paul Youngquist of the University of Colorado at Boulder. And I want you to take a listen to it now on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. Enjoy. Hello, and welcome to the New Books Network. I'm your host, James Stancil, and I'm here today with the author of A Pure Solar Wind, Sun Ra and the Birth of Afrofuturism, Paul Youngquist, who's an English professor at the University of Colorado at Boulder. And his book is published by the University of Texas Press, our friends there. They often provide us some good authors and some good books on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. And it's no different today. Paul Youngquist, how you doing, sir?
I'm good, thank you. It's good to be here, James.
Absolutely. It's great to talk with you. And we're going to be talking about the artist Sun Ra. Now, a lot of people probably have heard of Sun Ra, but there may be some others who maybe aren't as familiar. So we're going to be, going into a lot of depth and detail about Sun Ra and his connection to Afrofuturism. But before we do that, Paul, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you got interested in this topic?
Yeah, sure can. And that's a good question, because what's a white kid from the Midwest doing writing a book on Sun Ra? That's what I want to know. I was born in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Okay.
I'm not going to tell you the year. You can figure that out, though. And I was a preacher's kid. So I spent a lot of time in church, and that's probably where I was first exposed to music, but not, I can promise you, Sun Ra. My childhood was uneventful, but it was an eventful time. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the 60s, so there was that Vietnam War, all that worry about the draft, civil rights movement, all those killings. Mm-hmm. When I was in sixth grade, there was a kind of remarkable event in my life. I went to school on the first day of school. Mm-hmm. I came home from school, and I said to my mom, "Mom, there's a black boy in my class." Mm. And that hadn't happened before. And my mother, teacher's wife, she said, "Oh, really?" So she called up the school, and she got the name of that black boy's mother. Her name was Thelma. Mm-hmm. And she went down to Thelma's house and became her friends.
Wow.
Lifelong friends. So as I think about, like, where does this interest in the music come from, it comes partly from Thelma. But later on, I asked my mother, "Why'd you do that? You know, why did you seek out Thelma and make a friendship with her that basically shaped our whole life?" She says to me, "Paul," and she leans in and she says, "Paul, when they killed Dr. King, I felt I had to do something." Mm. You know, and we grew up in part of town that was literally just on the other side of the tracks, the proverbial tracks.
Right, the dividing line.
Yeah, and Thelma had bought a house on the wrong side of those tracks. Mm. So my mother wanted to make sure that Thelma and her family, the Bivens family, you know, had a good experience in the neighborhood. And so that's the first place I connected with black people and black culture in a way that kind of raised interesting questions for me. And I owe a lot to Thelma. Mm-hmm. I dedicated this book to my mother and my other mother. Mm-hmm. Joanne and my other mother, Thelma, because they were both very powerful women, important women in my life.
Thelma Bivens, right?
Thelma Bivens. So, and son Howard, who is my age. Okay. You grew up.
Yeah, I was going to say, if any descendants from Thelma or Howard are listening, you got the shout out right here on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel, from Dr. Paul Youngquist.
Oh, yeah.
Very influential. in your life,
I'm grateful for their company. Anyway, from there, I just grew up. You know, I went to high school. I graduated in 1976, the bicentennial year.
Wow.
So that was a big deal. And then I unlike Howard, my friend, I was able to go to college, right? So I went to a small Lutheran school for a couple of years. And then I transferred to the University of Colorado, of all places, more on that later, and graduated from there in 1980. I was an English major because I didn't know what else to do, and I liked to read, and I was enjoying that. A couple of my professors said, hey, you should go to graduate school. And I said, graduate school, what's that? and they told me, you know, it was like college, only more so. And I thought, well, that beats construction, which was my plan before that. So I kind of fell into graduate school, was accepted to the University of Virginia, went there for a master's degree, and then continued there for a PhD degree, which I finally got in 1988. And then at that point, you know, against all odds, I got an actual job at an actual university. Penn State University.
Okay.
You probably heard of that. And that was really a great moment in my life, too, because it was there at Penn State that I acquired a colleague by the name of Billy Joe Harris.
Mm.
Billy Joe turned out to be a really important figure in my life, my intellectual life, but also kind of my life of listening to music. Billy Joe was a poet. He is the editor of Miri Baraka, and he's a really deep listener to music, black music and jazz in particular. So we used to sit around, listen to music at Billy Joe's house, and eventually we called it, and I'm sorry to put it this way, but we called it music that the women in our lives hated, because they just didn't like it. We tended to listen to a lot of free jazz, a lot of traditional stuff, really kind of demanding stuff. But it was joyous, too, and he helped me understand how to listen to it. And one day we're sitting around listening and looking at each other and said, hey, you know, we should teach a class in this together. So we did. We taught a graduate seminar in free jazz. And it was then, and this was in the 1990s, it was really then that I started listening to Sun Ra.
Okay.
An amount of attention, curiosity, and then eventually a kind of obsession and love. So I owe that all to Billy Joe. And there, too, I just want to thank him for turning me in that direction. Anyway, I worked at Penn State for 20 years. And I was able to get a job at the University of Colorado Boulder, where I had been an undergraduate.
Right, right.
It was a good opportunity because my mother was living out here at that time, and she was getting on, and I thought it would be good to spend some time with her before she passed away. And I'm glad she did, because we were able to hang a bit before she left. And so here I am today. I teach courses in 18th century British culture from a Caribbean perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I teach science fiction also. It's kind of that combo. Be up to hear Sun Ra. And then I also do some literary and cultural theory. And a lot of my research right now has to do with Jamaica and these people in Jamaica, indigenous people of African descent called Maroons, who have been independent on the island since the year 1739 when they won their independence from the British. There was a certain amount of guerrilla resistance. So that's who I am in a nutshell.
Wow, that's a really cool nutshell there. You've had some interesting experiences, kind of been all across the country doing some different things, and wow.
Yeah.
And yeah, thank you for sharing, because it's really good for the listeners to kind of understand the backgrounds and the motivations for the folk, you know, that we get to hear on the New Books Network. So absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. And who is this man that we're talking to? It's Paul Youngquist. He's an English professor at the University of Colorado at Boulder. And we're talking with him on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel, today about his book, A Pure Solar World, Sun Ra and the Birth of Afrofuturism. That's a great title. He's a great artist. And this is a very good book. You know, I learned a lot about Sun Ra. You know, I came from a bit of a later time period. I'd heard the name and I'd heard some of the music. And like you, Paul, I was kind of fascinated. And so I learned a whole lot more about Sun Ra, you know, in reading your book. So, you know, I thank you for writing this and your efforts. And speaking of efforts, you know, I like to ask the authors as well. How long did it take for you to complete this work?
Too long, really. You know, an academic life is so full of a wide variety of demands.
Right.
I suppose, you know, I first came to this subject through Billy Joe in that course we taught together in the mid-90s. And the question for me became, the more I listened, like, where does this music come from?
Right.
You know, it's like nothing else, really. It's challenging. It's crazy. It's glorious. It's beautiful. But how did it happen? That question was sort of a germ for a while. I suppose answering it in a way that yielded the book maybe took years from start to finish.
Okay, wow.
You know, so it was a matter of doing a lot of research when the opportunity arose, and then finding a press that was interested in the project. And all hail University of Texas. I really appreciate their support for this project. And then writing it, probably a decade's worth of work. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, a decade's worth of work. And that's often, you know, what we hear. You know, scholars have different amounts of time. But I would say on average, you know, usually we hear 8 to 10 years, right, to do something like this. You don't just roll out off the turnip truck and the book is written, right? I mean, you have to lots of work.
A lot of work. You know, if I can tell a little story about researching them, too. One of the cool things about the book, then, is that it brought together my interest in music. A lot of us have an interest in music, but in the academy, we don't always know how to pursue it intellectually.
Right.
But it brought that together with my training in archival research, because just about the time I taught that course with Billy Joe, there was this big discovery in Chicago of a new stash of Sun Ra stuff in memorabilia. It had all been sort of squirreled away in the house of Alton Abraham. Alton Abraham was Sun Ra's business manager and musical producer for most of his career. And you can imagine that he acquired a lot of stuff associated with Sun Ra and his various bands. Well, John Corbett, who is a very important writer on Sun Ra and enthusiast of his music based in Chicago, he got wind that house was going to be demolished.
Oh.
Went over there and kind of literally just started taking stuff out of it before the bulldozers came.
Wow.
So he acquired heaps of just junk related to Sun Ra's career, business cards, letterheads, catalogs, contracts, bills, photographs, notebooks, scrapbooks, you name it.
Right.
And got it all out of there and persuaded the University of Chicago to take it, receive it, and house it as an archive.
Okay.
So when that became available, see, I thought, wow, I'm a trained researcher. Why don't I get in that archive and see what I can learn? And that's what I did. Drove to Chicago and spent a lot of time over the course of several years immersed in those materials.
So, yeah, archival research is, you know, is very important work for many academics, you know, depending on the type of book that they're doing. So it's good to hear you share, you know, with the audiences that, you know, that was something that was really helpful for you. And you never know. What do they say? One man's trash is another man's treasure, right?
That's
so
right.
To speak. And so this is something that would have gone in the trash otherwise if
that's
not for that individual. Wow.
That's right. This trash is treasure. And it's available really for anybody's access at the Rare Books Collection at the University of Colorado. I'm sorry. Whoops. Chicago.
Chicago. Right. I was, in Colorado. But the collection is in Chicago, right? University of Chicago, and it's probably accessible. Has it been digitized to your knowledge? Or
some of it has been digitized.
Okay.
A lot of this stuff though is going to be hard to digitize. Some of it is actual physical material, like the weird instruments, you know, and film from orchestras, shows. So it's just a really interesting collection of what we might call ephemera, stuff that would be thrown out, as you say, but holds the key to understand, to answering that question that I had, well, where does this music come from?
Where does it come from?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I guess we should get into a little bit of talking a little bit more about where it comes from and what you found through your work and your research. And I'm here with the author of A Pure Solar World, Sun Ra, and the Birth of Afrofuturism. And this book is published by our friends at the University of Texas Press. And I'm here with the author, Paul Youngquist. He's an English professor at the University of Colorado at Boulder. And I am your host, James Stansel, on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. So, Paul, yeah, let's get into a little more detail about your book, A Pure Solar World, about Sun Ra. Can you just tell us a little bit about it and what readers can expect as some of your main points?
Yes, I can. Basically, the book follows the career of Sun Ra from mm-hmm. his early years in Chicago. Mm-hmm. He was born in Birmingham. Mm-hmm. Up until the Sun Ra and his band sort of lands permanently in Philadelphia mm-hmm. in around 1968. So that's basically the narrative arc of the book. Mm-hmm. But what's more important to me was to focus on a few key points mm-hmm. that help answer that question of where this music comes from, and more importantly, perhaps, what this music is doing in its cultural and political moment. Mm-hmm. So that's really the itinerary of the book. Let me tell you what happened when I went to that archive and just kind of immersed myself in that stuff. I began to get an image of Sun Ra, just sort of a perspective upon which to view his life and his creativity mm-hmm. from working with that material, and also working with another really important book written by John Swed called The Place, The Lives and Times of Sun Ra, really the best biography available on Sun Ra. Anyway, between this information, I came to see Sun Ra as this enormously gifted musician who is struggling against several forms of confinement. Mm-hmm. So part of an answer to that question, where does music come from? It comes from Sun Ra's sense of confinement in an attempt to bust out of it. Now, three forms of confinement in particular, mm-hmm. as inspiring, if that's the right word, for Sun Ra. Sure. First of all, he was born in Birmingham, Alabama in 1914. Mm-hmm. His name was originally Herman Poole Blount, mm-hmm. and so he's born a black man in the South. So there's that, okay? But the real key experience for me was his own literal experience of confinement firsthand when he had tried to avoid military service in World War II as a conscientious objector.
Okay.
At first, Sun Ra just kind of avoided the whole thing. He didn't respond to the letters that asked him to show up for induction. And then he sort of more, with a greater kind of awareness, applied to be a conscientious objector. Anyway, he ended up spending a month in jail in Birmingham, several more months confined to a work camp for conscientious objectors in Keene, Pennsylvania. And I think this was a really tough experience for him. Mm-hmm. Because His first love was music, and his life was music. And during those times of confinement, he was unable to play. And he wrote letters that are just heartbreaking about how difficult that was for him. Mm-hmm. And I think that literal experience sort of performed for him the larger experience of many black people in the U.S. at this time. You know, the sense of like limited possibilities, constraints imposed upon. Okay, and so then there's the third experience of confinement he has. When he moves to Chicago in 1946, Chicago has been called at that time America's most segregated city. Mm-hmm. So he basically lived confined with African Americans on the south side of Chicago. So there, too, sense of constraint and limitation.
Right.
So I think this movement, this music, which moves toward openness, which tries to imagine better worlds, is very much born in the sense of limitation that came his experience of constraints as a black man in mid-century America. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the first answer that I came to that question, where this music come from.
Confinement, right.
Yeah. Yeah, constraints, you know, just like how do we break out of this? How do we make a better world, you know?
Right. And the whole ideal of, making a better world, a different world, that's kind of comes into that Afrofuturism kind of different kind of space connection there, right?
It is. Pure solar world, right?
Right, right.
All that solar language, that's part of this bid for another kind of reality, because the one he's born into is not one that is generous toward him or allows him the possibilities that he wants to create. So you got to create it, and you create it by imagining a solo world, and by creating music that'll take you there, but not only you, people like you,
right?
You know, foremost African Americans,
right?
So the whole I began to see the music as a kind of cultural activism, and Sun Ra as a cultural activist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's working in parallel with political activists like Martin Luther King or Malcolm X. He's their contemporary. But here's the deal.
Mm-hmm.
He's using music as his means to imagine a better world and to exhort change for the better.
Right. You know? So everyone has their different areas, I guess, that they have skills or talents in, and he's using his musical talent to try to affect the change.
That's his Afrofuturism. You know, if you're going to imagine a future from a black perspective, for him, you're going to do that through music, and music is going to be your vehicle to that better world.
Absolutely. And so we're here with the author, Paul Youngquist. He's a English professor at the University of Colorado at Buffalo, but it's Colorado Buffaloes. University of Colorado at Boulder, right?
Yeah.
And you know, the book we're talking about today is published by the University of Texas Press. It's called A Pure Solar World, Sun Ra, and the Birth of Afrofuturism, right? And so Afrofuturism is kind of becoming a vogue, kind of a really popular term now. So what does that mean to you? Because your subtitle is the birth of Afrofuturism, right? So you feel like Sun Ra is very important in Afrofuturism. So what does that mean to you? You've kind of explained a little bit, but maybe go in a little more depth.
Yeah, let me take a shot at it, because it's in the air. Afrofuturism right now is a really important cultural and aesthetic movement.
Sure.
But of course, Sun Ra didn't know anything about it.
No.
Partly what I'm trying to argue is that he's the father of the grandfather of Afrofuturism,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't use that word to explain it. You know, he was trying to imagine a better world, a future world from a black perspective, from an African-American perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, since he's so completely devoted to this notion of the future,
right.
I see him as sort of the granddaddy of Afrofuturism. And a lot of other artists and creators do now, too.
Mm-hmm.
But he got that ball rolling without having a word for it or without having a way of describing it. So one of the ways we describe it today is by looking back and seeing what he was doing.
Right.
So for me, one of the key moves that he makes, and I think this is huge and important, one of the key moves he makes is to say, hey, black people, you're living in the past. You're obsessed with a past of subjection and domination.
Mm-hmm.
You're obsessed with slavery, a history of slavery. You know what? That's pretty bad, because it's a history of death and mayhem. So his move is to say, forget that history. Think about tomorrow. Away from the past, turn toward the future.
Mm.
Imagine a better future, a black future, an African-American future. So he does this really, I think, courageous, bold, and questionable thing.
Hmm.
He says, hey, man, we got to detach ourselves from that history, invent a new history. And for that, he goes back to Egypt, ancient Egypt, where you have black people create a great civilization that lasts for thousands of years. He says, that's our true history. Let's forget about that middle part, that middle passage, which is so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And let's turn toward the future. And let's invent music and create works of art, contribute to the world works of beauty that are headed in a future direction, a better world in which we can realize true potential as black people, true happiness as black people. So that, for me, is his Afrofuturist move.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got a political register because he wants a better world, but it's also got a kind of visionary register because that better world, it ain't this world, right?
Mm.
It's another world. So there's also kind of criticism involved here of a politics that can't aspire beyond the present.
Mm.
Well, Sun Ra's future is really visionary. You know, utopian, you could say.
Sure.
A world where we've been liberated to fulfill our possibilities. And by our, I guess I mean Sun Ra's talking about African Americans, right. You know, possibilities they have for creativity and political and social potential.
So, you know, when I was a child of the 80s, you know, Paul, mm-hmm. I come with the Run DMC and, you know, all that kind of hip hop, right. Sugar Hill Gang and all that yeah. kind of movement. But, you know, uh-huh. when I learned about Sun Ra, it was kind of, you know, it was kind of a later kind of thing. And I think about him and, you know, and I make comparisons to a Jimi Hendrix, you know, yeah. to an extent, to George Clinton with Parliament, Funkadelic. Okay. Mm-hmm. Bootsy Collins, you know, and more like for me as a young man, like X-Clan, which was a hip hop group that had that real, like you said, that mm-hmm. kind of Egyptian, you know, African, connection, or an outcast, ATLians, and so there's a clear line, at least to me, you know, and you know more about it than I do, what do you think?
Oh, yeah. I think there is a clear line. I think that Sun Ra's behind a lot of this artistic expression, even if the artists aren't aware of it.
Sure.
Because what he invents, really, is a vocabulary, an artistic and musical vocabulary for imagining the future. So anyone, any black artist who's interested not just in bling in this present moment, mm-hmm. but interested in turning toward something else, something bigger, something mm-hmm. better, is really inevitably referencing Sun Ra as one of the guys, not the only one, who, and there are women too, who began to invent that possibility and use music specifically as an idiom. So absolutely you see it in P-Funk and George Clinton. They're very much part of that Sun Ra project, but they are so earthly, right? They bring it down to earth because it's all funky for them. And funk becomes this like force for transforming this planet. It's a really interesting move in the wake of Sun Ra because it's focused on the Earth, where Sun Ra is like, let's get out of here. Space is the place, man. We're going somewhere else. But that shows you that this Afrofuturist example and the kind of language that's being evolved through it mm-hmm. is capable of many transformations and applications. You know,
absolutely.
So people come along and do it. There's like Outkast is a really good idea. You hear it in music today. Today's music
is
just, you know, alive with Afrofuturism. You think of Janelle Monáe.
Yes.
For instance, and the work she's doing from specifically a gender perspective, woman's perspective. Mm-hmm. Oh, what about this? Am I an android? What? That hooks into the Sun Ra project. Or even the recent Tribe Called Quest record mm-hmm. seems to be very directly related to that. Or there are other artists.
Course.
Say Hieroglyphic Being, if you know his work, Jamal Moss from Chicago. That deep house stuff that he does, I think, just comes directly out of Sun Ra and Sun Ra's experimentations with the Mini Moog and the synthesizer and so forth. So one of the reasons I look to him for the birth of Afrofuturism is that Sun Ra, I think, has made possible all kinds of different responses to that possibility, the possibility of imagining better world for African Americans in the future, a black future.
Right. Through music, you know, people often now they think about Afrofuturism in terms of like fiction and, you know, mm-hmm. Science fiction or graphic novels or, you know, comics,
yeah.
some film, you know, but, you know, this is music. And you mentioned you gave some people, if they're interested in some nice musical references, you gave them a few there that they can
check
out and listen to.
I think, you know, one of the ways people talk about Afrofuturism today is that it takes kind of African-American creativity and crosses it with science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very much the case. And you can see how appealing that is. Sun Ra understood that the real aliens in America were from Africa. He understood that he was an alien from another world, and that's one of the reasons he wanted to head to another world. So he opens up the possibility of almost a musical science fiction or a black science fiction whose agenda turns out to be much different than conventional science fiction, which is basically written and created by white people for white people, you know.
So audience, sure.
If you add a kind of black register to science fiction, you change the whole game. And I think that happens with Afrofuturism. The point I want to make here, though, mm-hmm. is I think you can have a really creative and forceful Afrofuturism that does not have a science fictional component,
okay, but
nevertheless looks toward the future. And just to give you an example of that, I was recently watching Kendrick Lamar's video, I.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just set in the city. It's just set in the black part of town. And it's not about leaving the planet or anything, but it's so Afrofuturist because it's really about a message mm-hmm. of a better tomorrow and not getting stuck in a history of confinement. So I think there are lots of varieties of Afrofuturism, and I think Sun Ra's example really opens up those possibilities.
Absolutely. And we're here with Paul Youngquist, the author of A Pure Solar World, Sun Ra, and the Birth of Afrofuturism, published by our friends at the University of Texas Press. And Paul Youngquist is, of course, a professor of English at the University of Colorado Boulder. He's a Buffalo.
I'm Buffalo.
as an academic and now a professional academic and as an undergrad, right? So you're back home, so to speak.
That's right. I came back home, you know. It's true what they say about going home. It's not so like you think it is. Not as easy. Everything changes while you've been gone.
It does. But we can still make it home, though, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Maybe a bit of a different home, but we can still make it home. And Paul, if you don't mind, you know, I like to talk about like the book covers and jackets as well, because uh-huh. imagery, particularly with someone like Sun Ra, is very important as well. And so let's talk a little bit about this image on the cover. And yeah, though, yes, this is a podcast, but you can go to our New Books Network African American Studies channel homepage and look at the blog, and you can click and you can see the image here. You can click right through and purchase Paul's book from Amazon right there on our page. So you can do that as well. And you can see Paul's lovely face, and not mine. You don't need to see me, but you can you'll be able to see Paul's image up there as well. And this image, you know, what we're talking about now, this image of Sun Ra on the cover. So can you tell us a little bit about the cover image, and did you choose it? Was it chosen by the publisher, you know, any kind of meaning? And then as well as the title. Tell us about the title.
Sure, I will. I'll tell you both those stories. You know, it's a delicate choice. The choice of a cover image.
Of course.
Yeah. The press had some ideas and I had some ideas and we tossed them back and forth. That particular image won out, to my surprise, over a bunch of others that were like cooler and hipper and crazier. Mm-hmm. But that one really sends the message, you know, that there's something very creative happening here in the context of African-American culture. Right. Now, that image is one that I found amidst all the material that has happened at the University of Chicago.
Right.
It was in a big stack of pictures, glossies. You know, I was just looking through it. I thought, well, that's a cool one. You know, that's kind of crazy. What does it mean? I'm not sure, but I'm getting some futuristic feelings from it. It was used on the cover of an LP that Saturn Records produced. Okay. Sun Ra sort of DIY record house produced in the 60s called Fate in a Pleasant Mood.
Mm.
But other than that, it's not widely known. So I suggested to the press that maybe that image is black and white, so mm-hmm. high contrast black and white, and what the press did was take it and colorize it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Once they put the color to it, man, the thing just pops.
Yeah.
Really nice image. So they went with that, and that was good because we didn't have to pay anybody for it. The University of Chicago, in their generosity, gave us permission to use it on the cover.
Awesome.
And I think it says what the book needs to say about mm-hmm. Sun Ra as creator. Now, the title, it's interesting that you ask about that, because
mm-hmm.
what that title taught me is that an author often doesn't know very much about an author's own work. So I had a different title. I'm not going to tell you what it was.
You're not going to tell us?
All right, I'm going to tell you. My title was Sun Ra, Sounds for the Space Age.
Okay.
And the editor down there at University of Texas, this glorious man named Robert Devins, says, I don't know, Paul, I think that's a little flat. And I'm a little like, flat? What? Sound? Space? You know, doesn't that happen? He says, nah, I don't think so. So he said, just, you know, toss it over, think about some alternatives, will you? And I'll do the same. So a few days later, he wrote me back and said, you know, Paul, I've been reading the book again, and in this phrase, pure solo world, I think it just jumps out. I think that's what your book's about. You know, how about pure solo world and the Bird Band for Futurism? And I thought, well, A, you're the editor. B, yeah, it's his phrase. It's his phrase, and it describes his vision.
Right.
I like that. And then Robert, but then I said to Robert, well, the Afrofuturism, you know, that word wasn't around when he was working, and it's kind of far back in the mix in the book, isn't it? And Robert said, oh, no, this is about the beginning of something. It doesn't have to be up front, because Sun Ra is evolving the terms that will be available for later Afrofuturist artists. So I'm saying, I am persuaded that's why you're an editor.
Yeah, that's a great story, Paul. And, you know, it's, you know, I like, you know, you guys, the scholars and, you know, the authors and researchers, to share those kind of stories so people understand that, you know, it's not like you're sitting there writing and bam, you just have this outstanding book title, or you know exactly what the image is going to be. It's the work of the writers as well as the editors, and it's a group project to make these things go together.
You said, James, it is a group project. You know, there was a whole crew behind that book, and the people, the glorious people at University of Texas Press, really made it a much better book than it would have otherwise. You know, so I am beholden to and grateful to their assistance, support, and guidance in producing that thing. Yeah.
So shout out to University of Texas Press again from Dr. Youngquist. He appreciates your work and your efforts. What was his name? Robert Blevins, I think he said, right?
Robert Devins.
You've done good. I like this title, and I think you teased out some important meaning from Paul's book here. Yeah. It's definitely a good title. Paul, your title was okay. I'm not saying it wasn't okay, but...
He was right. You know, I'm here to learn. It's kind of a humbling experience to write an MBA. You know,
so for you young scholars, you young researchers and stuff, don't go title first. You know, make sure you get the work done and worry about that title later.
Get the work done. And be open to help, you know, because there are people out there who just want to help you. And they will.
You know, because I think back, and I'm sure you've had this experience too, you know, Paul, when I'm helping people, when I was working in K-12, helping students edit their papers or things, and they think, well, I'm Mr. Stamps, I need the title. You know, this is the title. You know, worry about that title later. Worry about that introduction later, because that introduction, that thesis may change based on what you find, or, you know, you end up, you know, with. Just kind of get into that meter, you know, of what you're trying to do and accomplish. So thank you for sharing that, Paul. This is absolutely a great example. And so you were talking to Paul Youngquist here, the author of A Pure Solo World, Sun Ra, and the Birth of Afrofuturism. So how would we describe Sun Ra's music, Paul? It kind of goes beyond category, but if we had to put it, for folk who maybe aren't familiar with Sun Ra, if we had to put it in a couple categories, what would we put it in?
Well, you could call it jazz. That's
what most people call it, right?
You know, I like his phrase, space music.
Ah, okay.
That seems to be the phrase that really stuck with him. When he was trying to describe what he was doing in the music, he used the phrase space music. The music, you know, it's beautiful, it's crazy, it's compelling, it's kaleidoscopic, it's weird. But I think it's all about space.
Mm-hmm.
So it ties into that project of pursuing other worlds.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the music is really a spaceship. Mm-hmm. It's really a rocket. It's a vehicle for space travel.
Ah.
And at the same time, and this is the weirdness of it, it's also the destination of space travel.
Wow.
The music takes you. It's where you arrive. Yeah. Right. And so I think that phrase is really, really important. And I would say that maybe... Here's where we've got to be careful. It's easy to go professorial on you, right? I think there are three qualities that characterize this space music. Sure, it's a form of jazz, but it's also, in a way, it's almost bigger than that. So these qualities for me, the music is characterized by this incredible openness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, it's response to confinement, a music that is open, you know, that is exploratory rather than defined in advance. First quality. Second quality would be a music of multiplicity. What do I mean by that? Many different rhythms, not just one, but Sun Ra will lay one over another over another. So it's incredibly clear. Multiple rhythms, harmonies are just crazy and beautiful and multiple. Many different melodies sometimes playing in and out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you have a pretty large ensemble. So you have many different players who are involved in the production. Mm-hmm. So again, space music is characterized by including multiple players, multiple purposes, multiple aspirations. Mm-hmm. So multiplicity is the second thing I'd say about me. And then the third thing that I think characterizes space music is improvisation.
Mm, right,
It's commitment to, you know, through that openness and through the individuality of the multiple players to improvising, but here's the Sun Ra difference, I think, improvising together.
Mm-hmm.
Collectively. So it's not just some individual against some changes.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's really an ensemble who are exploring together toward the end of making something new happen. So that part of that world that they're after, that's the world they create together. And they do a lot of that work improvisationally, even over tunes that they've played hundreds of times.
Right, right. So it's always a new experience, I guess, particularly if you listen to them live.
Oh, it is. It is always new. And that's one of the joys of listening to Sun Ra and the orchestra over the course of the career. You'll hear many different versions of the same tune. Sometimes an old swing tune,
mm-hmm.
Like Yeah Man,
mm-hmm.
Fletcher Henderson Orchestra. You'll hear them play it, and they play it with such great beauty, but not because they're faithful to the tune.
Mm-hmm.
It's swings. It's always new, you know. And it's always headed out.
Headed out of the atmosphere.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And speaking of headed out of the atmosphere, we're talking with Dr. Paul Youngquist. He's an English professor at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and we're talking about his book, A Pure Solar World, Sun Ra, and the Birth of Afrofuturism, published by our friends at the University of Texas Press. And man, Paul, I'm telling you, I could talk with you all day, man, particularly about, you know, I love music too, and I could tell you as well, hence your excellent book on Sun Ra, but I don't want to hold you up all day. But definitely, if people are interested in talking with you further and, you know, and sharing some insights or stories about Sun Ra or anything with you, can they get in contact with you via the internet or social media, or how can they get in contact with you?
Oh, they can just email me, and I would be so delighted to talk to anyone. That's paul.youngquist at gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Simple as that, and I'll get back to you for sure. And I'd be happy to start a conversation that would last for years. James, can I say one more thing about Sun Ra in the book?
Oh, man. Go ahead.
There's one more sort of purpose that I felt committed to in this book. One more thing that I wanted the book to do that was really important. And that was to celebrate Sun Ra as a poet.
Ah, right.
We all know him as a musician, but he was a poet too. And I think he was a very good poet and a very important poet, but he's mostly an overlooked poet. So one of the things I wanted to do was bring the poetry to the fore.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks about poetry as another form of music. Music is another form of poetry, so there's a kind of exchange between the
Absolutely.
Two of them. And maybe encourage people to read a little bit of Sun Ra's poems, to take the poems seriously as a way of understanding the music and vice versa. You know, we publish these poems on record jackets, in catalogs, programs, all over the place. You know, so they're kind of distributed all over his world. But the more I think we can immerse ourselves in his poetry, I think the better understanding, the richer understanding we can have of the music. And then we get a kind of philosophical sense, too, of what Sun Ra means by Afrofuturism, outer space, and the kind of blackness he wants to cultivate by pursuing this new world. So I just wanted to give a plug for the poetry, too.
Well, that's great, you know, because I think about a more recent artist, Tupac Shakur.
Yeah.
You know, same thing, you know, people, you know, scholars like yourself really want people to look at his poetry, you know, his lyrics as poetry, more so than just the musical aspect. So that's really great that you mentioned that, you know, same thing with Sun Ra. I mean, it's a lot deeper than maybe some would, you know, initially think from first inspection. Absolutely.
That's right. That's right.
And I think I heard your cat there a little bit too, Paul. I think your cat.
Yeah, was, you did. You heard him. He's at the door.
Yeah,
you know?
he's trying to get into dad.
In there. He wants in.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about Sun Ra, Paul. I mean, that's an exciting topic. Everybody wants in on that.
That's right. Yeah. Even the cat.
I'm sure your cat has heard a lot of Sun Ra in the household as well over the years, right?
Yeah. Some of it startles him, but I hope he's one. You know, that's the other thing I'd say just to anybody listening. Please give Sun Ra a chance. He's so accessible now thanks to the internet. In the old days, you couldn't get a hold of him. You had to send away for the records or go to a concert, actually, to hear it and to buy an El Salvador record. But now, he's just a click away. So I would encourage anyone with any curiosity about Afrofuturism or love for music at all, mm-hmm. just go to YouTube, hit anything. Mm-hmm. It could change your life. It'll probably make the world a better place.
Right, and lots of albums, lots of collections and such that you can purchase from, like Amazon or, you know, any of your music providers, iTunes or those kind of places. Mm-hmm. But they should start with your book, Paul. They should start A Pure Solo World, Sun Ra and the Birth of Afrofuturism. We're here with Paul Youngquist. He's an English professor at the University of Colorado at Boulder on the New Books Network, the African American Studies Channel. And so thank you so much for your time, Paul. I mean, it's great. I'm wanting to head out to Boulder now, so, you know, we can do like a listening party at your house, man.
Well, I hope this isn't the end. Let's just keep the conversation going. And thank you so very much for your interest in the book and in Sun Ra and telling other people about it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I would love to, you know, to have you on again. And speaking of which, are there any current projects you want to discuss or future projects or places you want to direct our listeners to that they could find more about your work?
Well, you know, a lot of the work I've been doing recently involves Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
I go down there and do some research, and I found over the course of the last, say, 10 years,
okay,
I've been going down there, that I've acquired an interest in and a passion for Jamaican music. So I think there's a bit of Jamaican music going to come out of this, maybe with a focus on Rastafari and its relationship to music, or maybe just focusing on Lee Perry because he's such an interesting
partner.
So yeah, I think you could do for Scratch what I've done for Sun Ra, and that would maybe open up another side of his creativity.
Yeah, well, I would love to see it, Paul. And once you get that completed or whatever you get, let me know so we can get you back on the show. I'm sure our audience would love to hear from you again. I mean, you're certainly a great man to talk to, and you're very, very passionate about your work. And, you know, I love that, you know, and it definitely shows through, you know, in your book. And, you know, thank you for sharing some of your personal stories as well, Paul. You know, it's really helpful for people to kind of hear, you know, exactly the process that, you know, that you went through in your personal story to get to kind of where you are now, right? You know, it's kind of a circle. You left Colorado and you're back, and then your personal story in Minnesota as well, right? With Miss Thelma.
Miss Thelma, who's still alive, and I'm so blessed.
Oh, okay. So Miss Thelma, if you can hear us right now, thank you so much for being such an influence on Paul's life. It allowed us to have this great work and the other great projects Paul has worked on. So you did good. You were definitely an inspiration to Dr. Youngquist, right?
Yeah, that's for sure. Oh, yeah.
All right. Paul, are there any final thoughts you want to leave the audience with from your book or any other things that you want to talk about before we close out for today?
All I'd say is... You know, follow the example of Sun Ra.
Mm-hmm.
Be visionary.
Right.
He said, Sun Ra said, you know, the possible has been tried.
Mm.
And it didn't work. It's time to try the impossible.
Ah.
The impossible. So whatever you think can't be done, think again.
All right.
You know, follow Sun Ra's lead, travel the spaceways, and imagine new and better worlds.
Ah, that sounds good. You know, I saw an image on the internet recently that it was the word doubt with the UPT scratched out, and it was just do.
That's it. That's the song right there. Do.
Just do.
Create.
Remove doubt and just do.
Yeah, and just do. Yeah. Well, you've inspired me, James. There we go.
Yeah, I love it. Well, no, thank you, Paul. It was, you know, it was absolutely great talking to you. I'm sure it will not be the last time that we'll be together on the African American Studies Channel on the New Books Network. And one more time before we go, the book is A Pure Solar World, Sun Ra and the Birth of Afrofuturism. It's published by the University of Texas Press. And if you go to our New Books Network page, you can click through there and you can purchase it directly. And you can also listen to this podcast. You can download it and you can hear Paul again and again and again telling his great stories and sharing his enthusiasm and interest for the work of the great artist Sun Ra. And so on that note, we're going to close out today. I'm going to let Paul go on with his day. Thank you so much for taking some time with us there, Paul Youngquist. And if you could say goodbye to our audience, Paul, we'll let you go.
Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening and traveling spaceways.
Oh, absolutely. And on that note, we're going to say goodbye for the day. Thank you for listening to the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. I'm your host, James Stansel. By the book, A Pure Solar World, Sun Ra and the Birth of Afrofuturism by Paul Youngquist. Peace and love, and we'll see you next time. All right, we're back here on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. I'm your host, James Stansel, and it was a great interview there with Paul Youngquist, University of Colorado at Boulder, the author of A Pure Solar World, Sun Ra and the Birth of Afrofuturism, brought to us by the University of Texas Press. And if you're interested in Sun Ra, or, you know, his music, or want to know more about him, or have some interest in Afrofuturism, definitely get in contact with Paul. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at his Gmail address that he mentioned, or go to his University of Colorado at Boulder webpage, and you can shoot him a message. He'd love to hear from you. And his current project that he's doing, he's working on the a book potentially on Rastafarianism, Jamaican music and such. So, you know, if you have some interest there, he'd probably love to hear from you with that as well. So the book is A Pure Solar World, Sun Ra and the Birth of Afrofuturism. Hope you loved that interview. I certainly enjoyed having it with Paul Youngquist. You definitely won't be that won't be the last time that you hear him on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. So everyone take care. Thank you so much for listening. Peace and love. And we'll see you next time on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel.